Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual, today. We start with the good, and Jim, was just yesterday we were giving much-deserved kudos to your colleague Eliana Johnson for her reporting on the internal memos of the Michelle Nunn campaign, which revealed plenty of reasons why Michelle Nunn should never be in the U.S. Senate. The other race that we mentioned that the Democrats have a slight chance to pick up a Republican-held seat was in the state of Kentucky. That's where Mitch McConnell, who's been there for 30 years, is running for a sixth term. He's running against Allison Lundergan Grimes. Most polling suggests that the race is relatively tight. She was asked some questions, one of which was about the situation in the Middle East. And here's what she had to say. Obviously, Israel is one of our strongest allies in the Middle East, and she has the right to defend herself. But the loss of life, especially the innocent civilians of Gaza, is a tragedy. The Iron Dome has been a big reason why Israel has been able to withstand the terrorists that have tried to tunnel their way in. Jim, Iron Dome is a missile defense system that the United States largely pays for. As many people have pointed out, it has nothing to do with tunnels.
I suppose it's possible that Allison Lundgren Grimes is thinking of that CBS show, Under the Dome, where there's kind of this invisible force field type thing that keeps everyone from going in or out. But I suppose the flip side would be that even that wouldn't stop things from underground, unless it's actually an Iron Sphere program, Greg, that actually encompasses the entire country 360 degrees. And then, of course, he subsequently issued a statement saying, well, because they have the Iron Dome, Israel can devote more resources to the tunnels. So that's what I meant. Occam's razor would suggest she's heard about the dome, she's heard about the tunnels, and she just kind of mushes the two together in her answer. When you're running for Senate, yes, it's a tough job, but not really knowing what the Iron Dome is and the situation with the tunnels and stuff kind of indicates that she hasn't been following this topic. And, you know, it's not like this just happened yesterday. Does not suggest that she is ready to deal with the toughest issues, most complicated situations, and that she has at best a cursory knowledge of these, you know, fairly significant major foreign policy developments, national security issues and things like that. Heaven forbid she decides to try to protect America. Perhaps, you know, that's a way to stop illegal immigration, Greg, is the Iron Dome system.
Very creative approach. I wonder how long it'll take her to pivot to the supposed war on women as this criticism mounts.
Stay tuned, folks, for our extra bonus martini today.
Exactly. All right. On to the bad martini now. And there's been a lot of things that Congress has been accused of not getting done this year. And one of those is the Highway Trust Fund extension. The House has passed its version, but the Senate decided Tuesday to keep the issue in limbo at least a day or two more. Initially, the senators voted 71-26 to pass a bipartisan plan that was pretty similar to the House bill, except in how it divvied up funding sources. But that change wasn't enough. Minutes later, the Senate trumped that first vote with another, setting up an even sharper contrast with the House. That final winning measure from Senators Barbara Boxer of California, Tom Carper of Delaware, and Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee easily passed as well and would shorten the time frame for highway money dramatically. The move would extend funding only through December rather than through May. Senators behind the plan argued it would force this Congress to come up with a longer-term solution for highway funding rather than punt the problem to next year. Jim, that would probably carry a little more weight if we didn't have Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer and some others earlier this summer calling this the next shutdown fight. So it looks like some folks are angling for something similar to that again.
I've been thinking about this kind of this common theme running through our current state of governance right now. Because in this case, we're told accurately that, you know, government shutdowns are something to be avoided. You know, Americans want their government to work. You know, it turned into something from that originally Republicans would say, well, if you don't give us what we want, if you don't reduce spending to the levels we want, we'll shut down the government. That occurred back in 1995 and did not turn out well for Republicans. So they avoided it for a really long time. Then Ted Cruz made his push in kind of a last ditch effort to try to stop Obamacare. That did not succeed and also did not work out well for the Republicans until the, you know, Obamacare disaster kind of swept it from the front pages. So you end up now in a circumstance in which now the Democrats basically say, well, if you don't give us what we want, we'll shut down the government because we know you'll get blamed for it. I think they kind of throw it in there, this, you know, this absolute total flip-flop on the part of Democrats in their sense of the unitary executive and the power of the presidency and things like that. They're now people openly saying, well, look, the president should just implement a de facto amnesty for a couple million illegal immigrants in the country by executive order, an idea that they never would have supported. You know, they would never wanted that kind of executive order type talk when Bush was president, because their guys in charge, they think it's perfectly hunky-dory. You may recall earlier that a couple congressional Democrats were drafting potential executive orders that they wanted Obama to sign, which is now just basically taking the Constitution and putting it in the paper shredder. You're supposed to write legislation, and it's supposed to try to get the votes, and you try to get the votes through there, and then it goes to the president's desk, and he can either sign it or veto it. In all of these cases, kind of the common thread is, well, if we don't get what we want, we will trash the system. We will overturn the system. We will ignore the system, ignore the laws, ignore the Constitution. We will do what we want so that we get what we want. And you see it in all kinds of things, that this administration is willing to redefine things if that's what it takes to get what they want. And this kind of, you know, raw will to power is, you know, exactly what our entire constitutional system was designed to prevent. It's cynical, and what's really kind of striking is, in the end, it sounds like this has been a really harsh assessment, but in the end, they clearly never really believed in the concepts of constitutional democracy at all. They always believed in the will to power, and basically, I want what I want, and I don't care how I get it. And this is just one more example of this, in which they're willing to use the threat of a government shutdown, which they previously thought was the worst thing ever, in order to get what they want over something as mundane as highway spending.
If you thought some of the characters in that story were folks you would never want to associate with, let's go to crazy story number one. Many folks will know the story of Chris Kyle. He was the most prolific sniper in American military history, wrote a book called American Sniper. In American Sniper, he referred to someone who he did not name that he had a confrontation with at a bar. And he said this person said that we were wrong, what we were doing in Iraq, and that we needed to lose a few SEALs. In subsequent interviews, Chris Kyle pointed out that that person was Jesse Ventura. Oh, and by the way, he decked him in the bar. Ventura then launched a defamation suit at Chris Kyle. When Kyle died, Ventura had the option, of course, of scrapping the lawsuit. Instead, he decided to sue Kyle's estate, meaning his widow and three children. Yesterday, the verdict came in and nauseated most people, Jim, when it turned out that they sided with Ventura and awarded him $1.8 million in damages in this lawsuit. Ventura had won between 5 and 15. And here's the quote from his lawyer, David Bradley Olson. He said, Kyle's claims that Ventura said he hated America, thought the U.S. military was killing innocent civilians in Iraq, and that the SEALs deserved to lose a few had made him a pariah in the community that mattered most to him, the brotherhood of current and former SEALs. I'm sure this action will probably cement his reputation in a real good way.
I guess we can insert, way to go, Minnesota, way to go. This really is kind of, it's a heartbreaking story. It's a maddening story. I guess I should be careful about what I say about Jesse Ventura, since he's so clear and quick to turn to the lawyers. But let's say that Kyle, you know, made up a story or something like that. You still have this discretion. You still have this question of, is this a fight worth fighting? And the idea of, once he dies, and you're going to go after the widow, you know, like what the heck is wrong with you? And then, of course, he goes out and he does his appearances yesterday, in which he's saying, you know, he's the victim here. Well, she had all of her attorney fees paid by insurance. I didn't, yada, yada. You know, like the amount of self-pity and the amount of just myopia in this certain, oh, then he's going to sue me. You know, his vision is fine, you know. The other thing which I'm just going to observe, this is one of those that just makes you totally look at things completely differently. And my desperate attempt to find something lighthearted in what's a very dark set of circumstances. Greg, does this mean we've been misjudging the Predator all along? He gets Ventura. And so really, in a way, maybe the Predators were just trying to warn us about the kind of guy that Ventura was. So I say to the Predators today, we misjudged you. All is forgiven. You were just trying to warn us. And come back and visit anytime. Going after guys like this. So there you go.
Jim, there's one more crazy martini that you have requested floor time for. Have at it.
In illustrating the first martini of Alison Lundgren Grimes' comment that the Iron Dome is protecting Israel from Gaza tunneling in, which is like violation of physics and kind of basic knowledge of these sorts of things. So I put a post about it this morning, and I have a file photo of Alison Lundgren Grimes at the Kentucky Derby wearing a hat the size of like the state of Missouri. And it's bright purple and it looks kind of funny. My caption is, well, you know, she always looked like an expert on defense and national security issues. So there is one follower on Twitter, and I don't mean to pick on this person, but this person who lives in Kentucky was very, very bothered by this and basically said, you're insulting every woman in the state of Kentucky. Now, the first thing is, I guess kind of implied from this, is that this is somehow going to hurt the McConnell campaign, and it's going to help Alison Lundergan Grimes, and, you know, I'm doing something. And so, oh, and she's defending the honor of Kentucky women now. And so, I'm just kind of left scratching my head, saying, like, you know, one, my job is not to get Mitch McConnell reelected. I may have a strong preference in this case, but I am not an adjunct of the McConnell campaign. And so I don't have to run everything through, does this help Mitch McConnell or not? All right. Then the second thing is, this is a snarky caption on one blog post. If someone decides, well, I was going to vote for McConnell, but then Jim Garrity of National Review wrote that caption that kind of makes fun of you know, Derby Day hats. That SOB, I'm voting for Alison Lundergan Grimes. Then that person is a moron. And not only are they a moron, they are too moronic for me to be able to do anything. Like, there's nothing I could say because their criteria for who they're going to vote for is so arbitrary and so random that there's nothing that I could say that would, you know, all of my attempts to put together a coherent argument in support of McConnell or against Grimes would come across as nonsense. I might as well be speaking in a foreign language to them. I mean, here's the thing. If you're folks in Kentucky, you love your Derby Day hats, great. Good luck. Enjoy it. You shouldn't be that upset about what I say. I'm just some guy. Even if you guys love your hats, we outside are allowed to make fun of them because we don't. And if it really bothers you, like this person on Twitter played the I'm offended card. Well, you know what? Nobody cares. Nobody cares if you're offended. I mean, life is going to be full of things that offend you. Welcome to a country that has the First Amendment. Because, by the way, this is how political correctness starts. Oh, you can't say that. It's offensive to Muslims. Oh, you can't say that. It's offensive to gays. You know what? If you want to say, Jim Garrity, you're a schmuck because you made fun of the Derby Day hats, fine, go ahead. You have that right. But don't tell me to take it down. Don't tell me not to write that. You know, and the idea that there is some sort of like delicate sensibility of Kentucky women that I have to tiptoe around in the process of my writing indicates that we've just become this infantilized, fainting couch crowd that is completely not what American public expression and public debate is supposed to be. If I say something you think is stupid, you call me stupid. You don't say, oh, that's got to come down because it's going to hurt Mitch McConnell or because it's offensive to this group of people or because somehow Kentucky women cannot have their Joker purple Derby hats, you know, mocked. You know, welcome to the grown-up world where people are going to make fun of you. And you suck it up and you deal with it, for Pete's sake. So anyway, as you can tell, this has got me really riled up. I just can't get my head around somebody being this bothered by this. So I guess my traffic numbers in Kentucky will probably go down a bit.
There is no constitutional right not to be offended. That may come as a surprise to a lot of people, but it is currently not enshrined. It may be soon, but it's not yet. So take it easy, folks. Jim, good rant. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review, also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.